This is Rick Malone for the San Francisco Symphony. Richard Strauss did not invent the symphonic poem. It was actually Franz Liszt's idea, taking a non-musical source like a poem, a novel, or a painting, and turning it into a descriptive work for orchestra. But even though composers like Smetana, Dvorak, Mussorgsky, Tchaikovsky, Saint-Saëns, and Franck all wrote symphonic poems, it was Richard Strauss who not only refined the genre, but practically made a career out of it. He wrote 10 major symphonic poems between 1886 and 1915, explaining that new ideas must search for new forms. This basic principle of Liszt's symphonic works, in which the poetic idea was really the formative element, became henceforward the guiding principle for my own symphonic work. End quote. Strauss wrote Also sprach Zarathustra in 1895 and 96, and it was radically different from his first four symphonic poems. First, it was about twice as long as anything else like it had ever been, clocking in at about 35 minutes. It was also structured differently. Liszt's tone poems and Strauss's earlier ones had been built to correspond roughly to existing musical shapes, like a symphony or a sonata. Strauss took the more free-flowing rhapsody form and expanded it to the point where he was able to sustain his narrative for 40 minutes or more, the way he did in his later tone poems like Don Quixote and Ein Heldenleben, A Hero's Life. A piece like Also sprach Zarathustra needs an expansive structure that can support that kind of length, because Strauss's inspiration for the work was the deep philosophical narrative of the same name by Friedrich Nietzsche, the book that gave the world concepts like the Übermensch, or Superman, God is dead, will to power, and the archetype of the philosopher dispensing wisdom from a mountaintop. In the book, the Persian philosopher Zoroaster does exactly that. He's been meditating on the condition of humanity and is ready to bring his insights to the world. But is the world ready for what he has to say? Strauss had been impressed by Nietzsche's attacks on formalized religion, which he felt was an impediment to humanity's process of self-determination, self-aggrandizement, and self-perpetuation, with the so-called achievements of civilization, morality, religion, and the arts, standing as pleasant distractions from the underlying reality of humanity. Strauss also appreciated Nietzsche's thesis that the realization of genius need not travel a pessimistic route, but that it might actually lead its possessor to happiness and might influence the surrounding world. Whether this influence would be for the better was not always as clear. In many ways, Nietzsche's book not only foresaw, but may have influenced the cataclysms that swept over Europe in the 20th century. Most of the classic symphonic poems of the mid-19th century were based on specific and often very detailed literary passages or pictorial sources. Strauss said that Also sprach Zarathustra was constructed on a more general appreciation of Nietzsche's book, writing that the text was the starting point, providing a form for the expression and the purely musical development of emotion, end quote. Strauss said his intention was to convey in music an idea of the evolution of the human race from its origin through the various phases of development, religious as well as scientific, up to Nietzsche's idea of the Superman, end quote. This may be what prompted director Stanley Kubrick to use the work's opening sunrise for the first scenes of his groundbreaking film, 2001, A Space Odyssey. Strauss didn't follow the actual narrative flow of Nietzsche's book, but picked scenes that inspired him or scenes that fit with musical ideas he already had. But he takes the titles of his scenes from the chapters of Nietzsche's book. Of Those of the Unseen World includes quotations from medieval plain chant to suggest that the strivings of the Christian religion are just an early and naive stage of human development. In Of the Great Longing, Strauss introduces what will be an ongoing conflict between the keys of C, representing nature, and B, signifying man, right next to each other, but harmonically incompatible. Of Joys and Passions represents the conflict between the sensual and the spiritual. It's appropriately wild. The Dirge is a darker version of this chapter, full of nostalgic introspection. In the book, Zoroaster says, "In me there is something invulnerable and unburyable, something that explodes rock. That is my will," end quote. The next chapter, Of Science, is structured like a classic fugue, the supreme exercise in musical logic. This fugue interweaves those conflicting keys of C and B, nature and man, which together involve all 12 notes of the Western chromatic scale. The Convalescent follows Zoroaster's breakdown, recovery, and achievement of transcendent understanding. Everything goes, everything comes back. The wheel of being rolls eternally. There have been several interpretations of the passage marked Dance Song, which is a tribute to the classic Viennese waltzes of the other Strauss. One is that it represents Zoroaster's celebration of the fully realized Superman, the other referring to Nietzsche's theme of the rivalry of life and wisdom, which is portrayed as a jealous woman. Thank you. The celebrations are interrupted by the crashing toll of a giant bell. Nietzsche's book, each of the 12 chimes is followed by the phrase, "O man, take heed." This is the Night Wanderer's Song, the same poem that Mahler set in his Third Symphony. Nietzsche wrote in his autobiography that, with Zarathustra, I have given humankind the greatest present that has ever been made to it so far. Strauss felt the same about his tone poem. After the first full rehearsal, he wrote to his wife, "Zarathustra is glorious, by far the most important of all my pieces, the most perfect in form, the richest in content, and the most individual in character. In short, I'm a fine fellow and feel just a little pleased with myself." End quote. The opening night audience agreed. Within 5 weeks, the piece had been performed by 5 different orchestras, and it soon qualified as the composer's most popular orchestral work. At the end, the sunrise theme returns, passed around the orchestra, and wavering between C and B, nature and man again. Nature has the last word, but only barely. This is Rick Malone for the San Francisco Symphony.